This is a podcast about the hardcore community.
Made by and for those who live authentic lives and embrace hard truths.
We archive the stories of the bands and people who make this lifestyle possible. I'm Josh Lyon.
And I'm Greg Benoit.
And this is the Hardcore Archive Podcast. All right, welcome to episode 136 of the Hardcore Archive Podcast. I'm Josh Lyons, just running solo tonight. Greg's not going to be with us for this episode. He'll be with us next episode, though. As always, give us a follow and a rating on whatever streaming service you're listening to us on, Spotify, Apple, whatever. I've been told that that helps with algorithms and all that stuff, and it gets to more listeners if you like the podcast, and tell all your friends, obviously. So this is episode 136. We're going to be talking to Nino about SummerSlam that he's booking in San Diego, but we're also going to be talking to him about some East Coast stuff, too, because I think he's initially from Boston, so we'll be talking about Boston and San Diego, so I think he'll probably have a pretty cool background to tell us about. And also, I know he went to both the big hardcore fest recently, so I'll be glad to hear all about that. So with all that being said, how you doing tonight, Nino?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Thank you, man. 136. Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah. Every time we cut the intros for the last like 30 or 40 episodes, we weren't saying the episode, and now I've been saying it. And every time I say it, I'm like, God damn. Like, some podcasts are up there. Like, there's a few like Axe to Grind and a couple others that are like in the you know, way more than this, but still, like, I know just getting to 10 is a pretty big thing in podcasts. So
yeah, that's amazing. That's a lot. I was two away from 138, man. That's just my favorite band since I was like a little boy. I'm so close.
But damn, Greg, when you edit this, we gotta think about that one. I guess we haven't thought about that
yet. Yeah, you gotta do some type of mystics one on that one.
We did 108. He interviewed a yoga instructor, but it wasn't quite episode 108. And I was like, man, we should hold that one off and have her on for that episode, because you guys talked about like the spiritual stuff too and whatnot. But you gotta plan. You know, we gotta plan it out, I guess. I guess before we get into kind of getting to know you, because obviously you and I don't really even know each other, so I'll be getting to know you just as much as the listeners. But before that, I know you mentioned last weekend this is hardcore, and I didn't realize you're at Sound and Fury too. So yeah, well, what's been going on, man? How were the fests these last couple weekends? I'm living vicariously through you right now, I guess.
Dude, such a trip, man. This has been the craziest month, and I didn't even plan on going to any of I just kind of like, I mean, I wanted to go, but I was like, it's a hard thing when you got two kids and, you know, you got to do all that stuff. So it's hard to plan that stuff out. You just, normally that stuff doesn't happen when you're in my situation, but it ended up working out. And it was quite the experience going from Sound and Fury on Saturday to 1 week after that going to This Is Hardcore. You know, like you said, yeah, I was born in Boston in 1984. Shortly after I was born, my mom split off and with my dad and remarried and moved to San Diego. But until I was 13, I was like a East Coast, West Coast kid. But I went to Boston for college, and I would go back and visit. And I went there. I actually lived there for a year to take care of my dad. And then I also just did a lot of stuff. Like, I was very lucky to be in the hardcore punk rock scene in the mid to late 90s there. Like, that's all I did was 100% that. But at the same time, I was also in the West Coast scene. So like, having that being my foundation. And then, yeah, this last couple weeks going to Sound and Fury on the Saturday, and then going on a week later to This Is Hardcore. This Is Hardcore reminded me of old Boston. I was like, this is different water, man. It was so cool. Sound and Fury, I went on the day. You know, anyone that's watching any of the Sound and Fury stuff, which that's probably like the most viral music festival there really is, you know, everyone knows on Saturday they had like the barricades and like the security guards on stage. And like, I just honestly, I was going there to check it out. Like, I had some friends' bands playing, some bands that are playing SummerSlam, and you know, whatever. I was doing my thing for SummerSlam too, but there was that like, you know, that kind of thing in the air where people are a little bit bummed out on the barricades. It kind of like sucked a little bit of life out of it, because from all the stuff you see, you know, from the festivals previously, it's just, you know, wild madness on stage. They got the stage dive stage, which I think's like just pure genius. And I mean, the festival is set up immaculate. I mean, the weather wasn't that big of a deal. I didn't think it was that big of a deal in Philadelphia. But yeah, going to that, and then going and then having like my West Coast background of knowing how the West Coast shows go and the hardcore shows go, and then going to This Is Hardcore, the Philadelphia, where Joe Hardcore is the security guard. He is the freaking the barricade. He is, I mean, shout out to that guy. Number one, that guy's a super nice dude. He's actually consulted me a few times at SummerSlam. He's dropped it on his pod. He's a really awesome dude that actually really, really does like, this is really all he cares about. This is his true blood. And that guy's really, really nice, awesome dude. But to see that dude regulate, I'm like, because I'm also taking notes, you know, I'm like, you could call it like also part of work. You know, I'm doing a little bit of research and R&D, as you call it, you know, I own my own two businesses that, you know, that's how I live. And so I'm like, all right, this is how you do business. You learn from people that do it right and that know more than you. And you ask questions and you research and you do as much possible as you can to be organized. And see the two different shows is pretty amazing. The one thing I will say is Philadelphia, man, that is probably like the scariest fools I've seen in a show in a long time, but they're not there to like literally, like it looks intimidating, but when you go there, someone falls, everyone stops and picks them up. Like that dancing is, that's hard. I mean, these dudes are bigger than me. I'm 6'4", 230. You know, these guys are twice my size. They've got their head to toes covered, the whole face in tattoos. It's just like, you got that here too, but West Coast is, I feel like we're a little bit more finesse than the West Coast, where when you go East Coast, it just reminded me, because Boston is a very hard, particularly during the 90s. And when I was there, I mean, I started going to shows when I was 10, like 94. That was concerts. Like shows was like 96 for me. So I saw like the hard shit. And then when I went to This Is Hardcore, I'm like, yeah, that reminds me of East Coast hard. Like that's that scary shit. But what a well put on show by both festivals. And I thought they were both amazing, but I kind of vibed a little bit more on This Is Hardcore thing, because it's just reminding me, this is like a little bit nostalgic for me in terms of seeing the difference between the two and the setup. You know, you go from Exposition Park in downtown LA or close to downtown LA, like it's, you know, nice setup. It's, you know, same thing. There wasn't like you're waiting in lines forever for either one or something like that. But then you go to This Is Hardcore, which is like in an industrial kind of setup in this like gated off, like, compound in a brick house. It's like what you would think Philadelphia is if you had like some notion in your head or whatnot. And then the facility was great, the setup was great, the bands were, oh my god, man, the bands were so good. It was definitely a little bit cooler being able to like, shit, if I'm gonna come away out here, I'm staged, I'm gonna jump on, I'm gonna sing, I'm gonna grab that mic. Like I didn't come out here to just dick around. And I went out there like half sick, like I was like not even feeling that good, but I just said fuck it, I'm gonna go all in. And it was so much fun. And like definitely worth it, man. And it was definitely a great and influencing experience, because it really helped me see, okay, this is how the big dogs do it. This is what my goal is. This is what I need to get to. And this is how it's done. You know, this is the proper setup. And this is fucking hardcore, you know, but both fests were amazing. You know, I just, maybe, I don't know, maybe because I flew out there, I feel like I should give it more love, but I thought it was a great setup at This Is Hardcore, and I thought Sound of Fury did great too.
You know, I know what you mean about the intimidation, especially of being in another city, but I kind of feel like you, where like I've probably been to tons of different cities, and I don't think I've ever been a fly on a wall at a show. Like I've always been right in the thick of things.
Yeah.
And I guess with you talking about both fests, before we jump into your story more, was there any one band that you saw at either of the two fests that you were like, it was your first time seeing them and you're like, man, this is a band I really want to keep my eye on more now? Like you were just like floored by their performance or whatever?
Yeah, totally. That's kind of one of my things when I go to fest. I'm like, I want to find that band that I didn't know about. There's so many good new bands this last like 5 years in particular. I mean, hardcore is blown up. It's not like a secret, you know? I mean, what, Scowl's on like the Taco Bell commercial now? What the fuck, you know? We're on some other shit that I didn't know was coming. Are we allowed to cuss in this? I'm sorry, I didn't ask.
Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah, whatever.
All right, because yeah. I got that mouth.
Yeah,
I tried. At Sound and Fury, I'd say trying to think, what was the band that really, I was really excited to see the Runts. They were supposed to play my pre-show, but the lead singer unfortunately got diagnosed with cancer, and homeboy he pushed off his he canceled a lot of their tour and a lot of stuff, and he pushed off his throat cancer, and he pushed off his surgery to play a show. So I was stoked to see them out there doing their thing. And they were one of the highlights for me personally at Sound and Fury. Let me think. Scalp de Grey, there's quite a few bands where I was pretty stoked on. Dead Heat played an amazing set. They're playing SummerSlam too. And I'm not trying to just boost the bands that I'm messing with, but I just thought they were really good. This is Hardcore, Conservative Military Image is a band that I absolutely love and I haven't got a chance to see yet. I got them coming out to San Diego in December, and I just like two bands that like I'm just obsessed with right now that I think are just, I can't stop playing. It's Mind Force and Conservative Military Image. And that was my first time seeing CMI and did not disappoint. Amazing, you know, them and Pain of Truth and No Pressure and like all the bands that were supposed to kill it, killed it. But the band from This Is Hardcore that out of the two shows, the one band that I took away that I'd say like, yeah, that's the one that I'm going to be listening to all the time was, it's called Suburban Scum. No, I'm messing up. I'm thinking about too many bands. And Regulate. I thought they were great, man. Robert Gate, I've seen before, they were awesome. You know, it was really cool. It was just, those bands are so good, man. I think Suburban, they were probably the band that came back with, like, whoa, they were like way better than I thought they were. And Pain of Truth, man, I when I saw them at previously, I'm always distracted or I got people asking questions. I Sound and Fury, I didn't get to see them as much because I was kind of farther away and I had to go to a table and talk to some people. So I actually got to sit and watch them. I actually kind of hurt myself, and plus I was sick, but I tweaked my knee out a little bit. And so I went actually to the balcony. I've never watched the show. I'm always in the front. You know, that's where I feel the energy is. Like I always say, when I talk about music, it's a therapy, you know. That was like a therapy for me just to go there and do that. I got a lot of personal things going on right now. So I was like, this is what I need to do. I'm just going to go. And hat off to those guys, man. They're handing off, you know, every other song's got a featured vocalist. Sometimes the lead singer's playing bass. It's very like kind of like Speed. Like they're all over the place doing a bunch of shit. And I'm like, dude, I'm wearing actually this shirt right now. Shout out to those guys, even though they won't come play San Diego. But they, it was cool. It's like, it was a new thing, you know, seeing there's one thing being in the front and just being engulfed by everyone. Because half the time you're just trying not to get your face broken and you're just trying to, you're stage diving, you're singing, you're doing everything. You don't realize how much is going on. But when you actually sit back for a second, you know, because I tweaked myself, my injury, I had to kind of sit back. And I didn't even, by the next band, when Mind Force came on next, I said, fuck it, I'm going back up. So it didn't stop anything. I'm still limping around now. But to watch it for a sec, I was like, man, that's cool. This is like the next level. It reminded me of like seeing like, remember like a lot of hip hop albums would always have like featured like someone else and someone else.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
It seemed, it that's what it felt like to me. I'm like, this is watching a hardcore band that's very clearly influenced by hip hop, but they're not like doing rap core. You know, they're just doing it. It's so cool seeing them do like a different way type thing. And then, you know, and the mishmash, you know, you have the Coyotes and No Pressure that can somehow mix in and have equally as crazy of a set as like a Mind Force or Pain of Truth, or, you know, that kind of shit. So, it was really, really cool. And I think all those bands, everyone did great. But if I would say one, the band actually I probably had the most fun with CMI. They just got a different style too, you know. It's cool with hardcore right now, how it's not all just one flavor. I always say like, man, there's so many flavors out right now. You can pick and choose. It's not just like a Hatebreed only style. You have to sound like Jasta and you got to bring these riffs and it's got to have this, you know. Now it can be like all over the place. And, you know, when you listen to this music your whole life, you don't want to listen to the same shit every fucking day, you know, and the same style and the same everything. You like a mix up, you know. So I thought both shows did a good job of mixing it up and whatnot. For sure.
Yeah, that CMI record's obviously an album of the year candidate. I think the next few months, I have a feeling they're going to produce some pretty heavy bangers too. I know Pain of Truth's got one coming out with Magnitude, and there's a bunch of other good ones coming out. Did you do any setup? I know we're going to get to your clothing in a little while too, that you do and shit. Did you do any tabling with that at all at Sound and Fury or This Is Hardcore, or not really?
Nah, man, I flyered at Sound and Fury. You know, I still believe in the old school. You know, you'll still see, you go anywhere in Southern California right now, you'll see flyers for SummerSlam and everything. And I'm still on foot because, you know, in the 90s, that's the only fucking way I knew. And it worked. Why? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, so I'm still doing it. I'm still out there and I'll talk to you. I'll hand you a flyer. Whatever you questions you got, you know, do my thing. But one of the things, like with setting up like booths and doing that kind of stuff at music festivals, that's what I found out when, you know, when the firm was just a clothing line, is that's a very expensive thing. And it is very hard to meet that expense. You know, you're pretty much hoping to break even. I didn't want to do that. You know, it's, if you want to do a clothing line the right way, number one, you got to be like single with no kids. And number two, you got to be willing. You got to have like some backing, like financially. You got to be out there. You got to go to everything all the time. And I just personally don't have the time to do that. So once I figured it out and found like how to run a company, I'm like, I can't go to every concert and set everything up. But I found going to concerts and just physically talking to people, it's just the same thing. When I was at This Is Hardcore in Philadelphia, see a dude wearing a striped shirt. Hey, what's up, man? Where are you from? Oh, I'm from freaking. I was talking to him and his son, actually, freaking from Inland Empire. I'm like, what? You guys still already out here? I'm like, we're in Inland Empire. We're from High Desert. I'm like, you're not just from Inland Empire. You're from like the back end of Inland Empire. You flew all the way out here? I'm like, oh shit. Well, let me talk to you guys for a sec. You know, so I see some other dude walking by me with a Desmadre hat. I see some other dude walking by me wearing scalp shirts and stuff. So it was, and then I'm talking with the bands and stuff that I'm working with and that I know, but I feel like doing that kind of thing, you know, just getting out there. I wish I could get out more. But being a father is not as, you can't do it as much as used to, you know, but I feel like that's always the best way to do it. You know, sure, you can do the social media marketing. And I guess the one good thing that came from COVID, because I started the firm 2 months before COVID. I think I started it February 27th and COVID was what, like the next day, you know, it was St. Patrick's Day, like right around then. So it was like 2 months I barely had, right? Something like that. Point is I had to figure it out and do the online thing and see how that works. And it was a breath of fresh air to be able to go back out and do, you know, do the shows. And that was the idea initially of the shows, was I was like, all right, I'm going to do shows and I'll promote the clothing line through the shows. And, you know, one day the firm was supposed to be a tattoo shop. My theory was like, hey, what if Nike opened up a gym? You know, they're branded as a top sports equipment line. I mean, no one's going to second guess them as if they opened up a line of gyms. I'm like, we'll do the same thing. And the company that actually I was supposed to be just manufacturing my clothes, they loved the idea so much that became a partner with me. And at the end of the day, we didn't see eye to eye and everything. And I turned down a lot of money to just do it myself. And the cool thing about doing it myself was, I could overnight just say, you know what, from now on, I'm going to focus on this and I'm going to talk to 20 people about it. I'm going to have a big meeting and all this dumb shit. I'm like, you know what, from now on, the clothes are still there. We got a bunch of cool collabs coming out. And I always say we, because it sounds more professional. I have a bunch of cool collabs coming out and some shirts, but I'm really focused on, you know, the music now, my scene in San Diego. San Diego, to me, is an amazing scene that just needs someone to step up a little bit more and a little bit more consistent. And that's what I'm doing now, is I'm doing, you know, what I see people do in LA, what I see people do all over the place, you know, being in Boston, you know, it's not about being a talent buyer for a House of Blues or working for Live Nation, be independent promoter, do it DIY and work with cool bands. And I just book the shows that I want to see and the ones that I think should be in San Diego and the ones that I think will help elevate San Diego scene and all the bands, because San Diego's amazing bands, helps bring everyone up. We all rise together, is what I say.
Yeah, that's kind of why I'm getting back into booking shows, and that's, I'm sure, why you got into booking shows in the first place. It sounds like you and I are very similar, like booking shows like years ago and now getting back into it now, and both for the reason that, you know, it's because there's shows we both want to see type thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But let's step back just a minute, because I know you've referenced, and I have too, a little bit, the 90s a little bit. So kind of, because I'm a little bit confused, because you mentioned it a little bit in passing here. Did you live in Boston as a youth or just briefly? Yeah. And then you've mostly lived in San Diego, or like how like, I guess what period of time were you in the Boston scene for, I guess, then like for shows and stuff?
Yeah, I was unaware of it when I was a kid, but now I am beyond grateful and blessed. I'm from the city of Boston, born in Boston, like my dad lives in Dorchester, like not like a suburban, like I meet someone every other day that says they're from Boston, but where are you from? We're in Boston. Well, like I'm assuming you're from a neighborhood of the city, and then they tell me like some West End part of the state. I'm like, what? I'm like, you don't know. That's not Boston. I'm like, Boston is Boston, but you didn't grow up in Boston. I'm like, all right. And I mean, I gave up my Boston card. I'm 100% like West Coast kid, but that Boston and San Diego guy, but that Boston has always been in me. And that's a big part of who I am and how I do my thing. But let's see, 1994, I was 10, and that was a big year for everything, musically. That was the year punk broke, quote unquote, and it definitely did. I was obsessed with two things. I was obsessed with skateboarding and music, particularly the heavier end of it, particularly shirts. All you would see me wear is a band shirt, and it's pretty much like me right now, a band shirt, and I have my skateboard. And so for me, like I was in the city as much as possible skateboarding. Like the subway system in Boston was really easy. Actually at that time, my dad lived in a part of Boston called Forest Hills. So I could get on the Orange Line, which would bring me right downtown. So we're talking like, yeah, this would be 96, 97. That's when I really like my first show was like 96. It was the Queers at Middle East. And then my second show was Texas Is the Reason. And then I went to a couple weird shows. And then the next show was like, I'm talking show, not concerts. Like concert was like Red Hot Chili Peppers, like in 94. And I saw a lot of cool concerts. But the shows and stuff by pretty much by 97, I went to my first real show. My first real true punk rock show was actually the Casualties with the Veruckers, and they had I think it was the release for the punks for the first LP, and I just fell in love. It just clicked, and I went to everything everywhere as much as possible. I was already in the city all the time during the day because that's when they had the Saturday and Sunday matinee shows. And I wasn't like, I wasn't a perfect kid, but like I wasn't coming home at least at 12 and 13 with the cops or like when I smoked cigarettes. I was a little bit of a fucking asshole or whatever, but it wasn't like that bad. My dad's like, hey, be home by like 9 o'clock at night. I was home at 9 o'clock at night. He had no clue that I was like at the Rathskeller in Boston or at the Middle East or at some crazy DIY like underground show. Because initially I was just skateboarding all day and then coming home. And then I was skateboarding until the show started, which happened, be like 10 minutes down the street, go to the show, became friends with the tribe. Now I'm hanging out with everyone, hanging out at all the spots. A lot of the spots that you hang out at, before social media, you just had to be at a place. You had to be at whatever that spot was. For us, we had like in Harvard Square, we had the pit. And me, I was hanging out a lot in Copley Square in Boston, where we used to call them Copley Punks. There's a couple other spots where you just always knew to be at. You're either there or you're skateboarding to the next spot or you're at the show. So I was just blessed every, and that was like the golden age, probably like one of the last golden ages of hardcore and punk rock for Boston. I mean, they've had like lots of things go on since then, but times have changed, clubs have gone, bands have moved on, shit like that. But yeah, being able to be a part of the punk rock scene in Boston at that time. I'm talking like the beginning of Dropkick Murphys, Unseen, like the Bruisers, and then all the bands from, overseas there is different than overseas here. I haven't even talked about being in the West Coast and all the shit I got to see here. But being in Boston, overseas, that's obviously London or England, got all those bands coming over. So I'd go to like see like the Business with like the Bruisers and Blood for Blood. And then the next week it's winter, vacation. My dad's like, you got to go to see your mom now for the next 3 weeks. And I'm in San Diego now seeing Pennywise and Social Distortion and Bad Religion and I even seen like the Business and Blood for Blood and Dropkick and just everyone. Like it was an amazing thing to be in kind of two scenes at once. And to me, I was like, shit, you're gonna send me to San Diego in the freaking winter? They don't got snow and they haven't kinked everything off. That means I get to skateboard more and I get to go to more shows. But the problem was is at least I don't know if it's a problem, but I didn't like the politics are different. I was dancing like an East Coast hardcore kid. Like all they did here at the time was Circle Pit. And I go see like Sick of It All. I remember one show, saw Sick of It All, and I was just dancing hardcore, like East Coast hardcore style, like mid or to late 90s. You know, it's like when the ninja shit started. And this dude just grabs me and pulls me off to the side. He's like, dude, they're gonna fucking rap back you if you keep dancing like that. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I'm coming from a scene where it's like there's hammers and nails, dude. If you're a fucking nail, you're screwed. That's not what you want to be. You got to go in there and be smart, and you know your space, and you know where you're at. You know how to act right, but you're not. You have to like handle yourself. And then when I go out to the West Coast, they're like, everyone's about to beat the living shit out of you if you keep dancing like this. There's gangs here. There's a lot more shit. Like there was crews in the East Coast, but it was based off of the genre of music. If you went to a straight edge show, because you guys are like an upstate New York
Rochester, yeah.
crew. So like to us back then, upstate New York was like you would hear these legendary tales of like these youth crews, and if you smoked a cigarette at their show, they freaking slashed your back, and you know going to like. You know, all this crazy shit. And I'm in Boston where it's just like everyone's just wild. And at, like FSU, like kind of ran our scene at the time, and they weren't a straight edge crew and there aren't or whatever. It was just different. But you knew like certain places, how to act in certain places, you knew where to be at. And then when I came to West Coast, I was just wilding out and didn't know the difference between the two. And then, yeah, they have just a lot more shit going on here. But it was a really cool thing to see the two. And it totally, I mean, still to this day, reflects upon like the shows that I book, reflects upon like just the way I go about myself. If you look at the firm shit, I mean, I did two collabs with Chopperhead because that's what I fuck with. You know, the last collab I did with Truth and Chopperhead was like a it's a shirt where like half of it is the Rathskeller and like Fenway Park type shit, and the other half's like West Coast type shit, and it's still, a very big part of my stuff. But like. I mean, I mentioned that business show that I went to a long time ago. I think that was the first one I saw them with. I must have been like 90, 97, if I believe correctly. I just booked the business again, and I did it in a nostalgic manner in the sense of I remember the, in the sense of like the first time I saw the business, it was a hardcore Oi show. So I booked the business here as a hardcore Oi show. I have it with like Section 8 and like Violent Way, and then some local hardcore bands and street punk bands and Oi bands. Because of Boston, because of the East Coast, because the way things were for me at that time, So there's a ton of influence from there. But at the end of the day, yeah, my heart's in California. I'm a San Diego kid, and like I said before, and this is just where I feel like I belong, where I fit. When I went to college and stuff like that, I clearly didn't fit in with that. My mindset's different. The way I look is different. The way I talk is different. The things I'm into are not the same as everyone else. So I just different worlds, totally different worlds. But I got to experience really cool ends of the two different worlds.
So you picked up all the West Coast dialect after moving out there and such, like you always say, like that fool and stuff like that and whatnot, or
Oh yeah. It was funny, man. My high school was like my mom's from Puerto Rico and my stepfather's from Mexico. So I grew up in a very Hispanic household. My father's from Italy personally, but he's living obviously in Boston. But my first, like the high school I went to, we bused from Barrio Logan, which is the most proud, like historically Chicano neighborhood in San Diego. So like all my friends were either like crazy ass white boys or just cholos, and we all looked and talked the same, and we never had beef with each other. There's never anything like that. Like where I went, because I don't care who you are when you go to high school, when you're in that teenage, like those teenage years, that's when you find out who you are. Like you can always fuck around, whatever. But like when I meet someone and they're like, oh, it's totally different in high school, I'm like, maybe you're just a dipshit in high school. I don't know. But for me, it was like, dude, I found out who I was in high school and I haven't changed one bit since then. And so I kicked it with everybody. I never had any problems with any type of person, whether it's kicking with the stoners or the surfers or the jocks or the the essays or the fucking, whoever. I was always kicking it. But yeah, when I went to school in college, I've always spoke like this, like in terms of the sense of like I never had a Boston accent at all, like not one bit. And so that kind of always stuck out. Like people be like, why do you talk so weird? You know, initially I'd be like, dude, I just pronounce the letters in the alphabet. I don't know why. That's weird. But then they'd be like, you know, some of the kids like that I went to college with, they were funny. Cause then I got them on the flat bill hats and I got them saying this fool and I got them wearing by time, like, I don't know what year it was, that stupid show, one of the MTV shows, Rob Dyrdek, the skater, I don't know. He became like really popular on a TV show on MTV and he wore like all the shit that I had been wearing. So next thing you knew, everyone just kind of like, I'm not like trying to say it was like this trend set up, but next thing you knew, by the time I left my school, half my friends were wearing flat bill hats and Dickies and like skater shirts and shit like that. And in the beginning, it was all like true East Coast, just polo everything, you know, like all that kind of stuff. But yeah, and everyone, they always talk about my speech and like the words. You know, it was really funny. One year I lived there, the year I was taking care of my dad in 2015, and he lives in the most Irish part of the country. It's a sector of section, excuse me, of Dorchester called Adams Village, and it's per capita it's most Irish people in the country, right? I grew up bartending and running bars and consulting and doing all that shit. I worked at this bar with everyone that was 100% Irish. All the customers, all the staff, the owners, the people that even made the place. And then it was me just sitting there, this Italian Puerto Rican kid with all this West Coast slang. By the time I left that place, I was talking Irish slang. The Irish were talking West Coast slang. I had them calling people fool. I had them fucking throwing daps at all this shit. It was funny, man. It was a good time, man. If anyone's having a good time, it's those guys.
Jumping around a little bit, you talking about I think maybe it was Robin Big was the name of that show.
Yeah, that's
I
right.
never watched it, but I always was flipping around. Maybe I saw it a little bit because I would watch Viva La Bam, and I feel like it was on around the same time as that. But either way, is that like was that like seeing like you kind of being into like clothing and shit and seeing people dress the way that you were already kind of dressing, was that kind of what gave you the first idea? I know you didn't do the clothing until years later, but like, were you thinking about it already because of that, like back then, you think, or?
Nah. My thing was like, I mean, there was definitely a period where I wasn't as like, I wasn't wearing as much, basically just band shirts all the time. All I wear is band shirts. Like, they say it all the time, band shirts. Then for a while, I kind of like mix it up. I wasn't so engulfed by the scene. I wasn't like a quote unquote scenester. You know, I was more open to meeting more people and doing other stuff and whatever, you know, but, and then you always go back to, you know, you always go back to your shit. And I just was like, you know, kind of, it just, I felt like a cartoon, like just, I'm wearing the same thing every day. So I started designing my own shirts just to wear something different because I couldn't find shit that, because it's again, it kind of, it all goes back to the East Coast, West Coast thing. I like the Boston's different than New York, Boston's different than DC, Boston's different than, I guess everybody besides Philadelphia, now that I found that out. But Boston's a real hardcore, fucking heavy place, man. And I like hardcore heavy shit, you know, but I also love that West Coast vibe and shit. So I was like, I couldn't find something that combined the two. So I just started making, I had a couple friends that had they were screen printers. And I started making and designing shirts. And the idea was like, I'm gonna make like 20 of these just because I want one or two for myself, and then I'll give the rest to my friends. And then the next thing you know, everyone wanted them. And I was like, oh, it's a fun, cool passion project. I'll keep fucking with it, see where it goes. And I've always, like I said from earlier, you know, I've always loved band shirts in general and just the imagery on them, the designs, all that kind of stuff I thought was super cool. So I designed my shirts very much like a band shirt. Going back to like that last shirt I dropped with Chopperhead, the whole shirt was, I designed it as a, that's what you would see like on a metal shirt. It was a long sleeve. I believe in using the whole thing. Like some punk shirts, they're only used like one small little part, and that's it. Like that's a traditional punk shirt, like a small little image in the front. That's it. So I like how metal shirts use like everything. Use the whole front. Use the whole back. If it's a long sleeve, it's all the way on both sides. So the influence from that, from the scenes, definitely influenced like the logos and the shirts and stuff that I made. But yeah, initially the company was a tattoo shop and, like I said, and clothing line. But the COVID thing and everything else just kind of threw it off and made me reset a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So now I know from listening to your interviews with Truth, I feel like you, him, and I are kind of similar in that, like, we have these ideas in our head where we can tell other people to draw the things and do the art where we might not be able to do it so much ourselves. But you were mentioning designing the shirts yourself in the beginning. Like, did you do it for a little while and then kind of start having other people help you with it, or?
Well, so yeah, so my process is I have a couple ways of doing it. Generally, I do like a rough draft. I'm not a graphic designer. I try so hard with Photoshop, but like I'm not like at that level yet. And if I'm gonna put something out there, it needs to be super clean and super proper. So basically, I'll design the whole thing out. I'll put the whole draft together, and then I'll either have like someone that only does what I say. I'll say, okay, this is exactly what I want. Put this together, and it has to be in a high res or vector format. So I don't have that skill. That's one of the things where I need to strengthen myself on. Is getting better with that stuff. But I'll either have like a person that just I'm like it's a constant fix this, let's get that, let's move this. I want this here, I want this there. I can do it that way, or I'll work with an artist. I basically have like one. I guess. Two artists that I'll work with, and I'll say, this is the same thing. This is the rough draft. This is what I'm doing. Put it together, give it your little touch, and then let's keep revising till we find it. So that's kind of like my process when it comes to doing it. 'Cause yeah, when it comes to all that stuff, I'm not like super, super savvy with setting it all up and that kind of shit. But it's growing up getting tattooed, like it was the same exact shit. It's the same exact thing as getting tattooed, and I've been getting tattoos. I was like 17. Like my best two of my best friends luckily became really good tattoo artists, but that's how we would do it. I'd be like, hey, this is what I want here, like let's look at it and let's come up with this image, and then okay, let's tweak this, let's tweak that, okay, now let's put on my body for the rest of my life, and then my tattoos aren't like one big tattoo. They're just it's kind of like you see like on like a like patches. It's you call them I think a lot of people refer to it as patch tattooing, where it's just like this tattoo connects to this tattoo, connects to this tattoo. So I have like 5 million designs on me that I came up with. So there's also that connection of I've been designing tattoos since I was a little kid. But like I say little kid, not 17. I mean, when I was like in fifth grade, I remember designing my first tattoo. And something about just doing that kind of thing has always been something that I was really into. Like my daughter loves drawing things and being creative, and I just tell her go with that, man. That reminds me of when I was your age. All I wanted to do is create and find things, and she freaking made a paper dress the other day, and I was like, dude, that's so cool. You used your mind, and you're creative enough to do something that you think's cool. This reminds me of when I was your age, drawing little tattoos on the table or doing my own thing. And then when I was, in my 20s, coming up with designs for shirts, and I'm like, you're on the same path I am. That's cool. I think being creative and keeping your mind moving is always a good thing.
Are your kids old enough yet to understand and kind of be supportive of what you're doing with like booking shows and doing the
Sure.
clothing thing and trying to do the tattoo thing?
Check this out right here. So, this is, see if you can put it on. So my daughter redrew my this is the was this the pre-show? It's
Yeah.
behind me. She redrew my flyer for the pre-show for SummerSlam. It's adorable. This thing is like one of my prized possessions, man. They're 5 and 6, and they know I do something. They want to go to concerts now, like all the time, because they see that that's something that I do. And but they'll be like, make me a shirt. I want to have a unicorn zombie shirt. I'm like, okay. I get why you say unicorn zombie, because you like unicorns and you see that I have this kind of imagery that would reflect on the zombie shit. So they're connecting it, and you see that I make shirts. So you think I can just pop up with a shirt like right now, but they get it, but they're not like fully like understand it, but they're my inspiration. Like my son and my daughter, I have a 5-year-old and 6-year-old. Like I said, my son is about to be 5. Yeah. Like my goal is to not just do this awesome stuff for my scene and to love what I do and not ever call it work, but it's also to be an example for them. So at the time and point when they finally do put it all together, like, what's dad do? Shit, 'cause I've been doing two things since I was particularly since I was 21. I mean, I've been going to concerts, like I said, my whole life, but almost, but like, you know, working in bars and doing that stuff. I created a bartending school. That's how I feed my family. I know about that. And that's something that I like to do. And I get to help people start that career. And I do like consulting and help people like save their businesses from going out. And then I love music and I love, doing this thing. So I hope one day, you know, when they do figure it out, they look at it and inspires them and puts their minds in the set, like, just do what you love. Fuck everything else. You'll figure it out. Like, just go out there and do it because life's too short to fuck around. And I would hate to dread going to work 9 to 5 for the next 40 years and then die. You know, that would be like misery to me. So when they do figure it out, and they're getting it. Like my daughter wants to go to shows now, and she doesn't get it, but she wants to go and she wants to be there. I was supposed to take her actually. She got sick. I was bummed, but we were supposed to go to the Attics the other weekend. I was so bummed she couldn't go, and she was so bummed she couldn't go. And I was like, you have no idea what this is, but you just want to do it because you love your dad and you know daddy is into this shit. And you know, when you get a little bit older, you figure it out a little bit more. But I think it's really cool that they see it.
Yeah, my son's 5 and my daughter's 2. And my son's pretty much the reason
Awesome.
why, when I first started this podcast, it was just me doing it. Now my friend Greg's a part of it, but he was pretty much the reason why I started doing all this because I was like, kind of want him to see all the shit that I grew up with. And he's always said that he hates this music, or not hates it, but you know, he doesn't like it and he'll imitate
The
it. And
5-year-old.
yeah, and he'll tell me to turn it off. But then recently, when we were walking somewhere, because I show him, because I booked a show. I guess I booked like 2 shows in the last year, and it's right near where we go. We have a really cool museum downtown in our city. It's like a National Museum of Play, and it's got toys and video games and all this other crazy shit.
Sure.
So when we're leaving there, we walk by the venue where the show is. It's called the Bug Jar, and I've showed it to him a few times now, and I've explained the whole thing to him. And then recently, I was like, "Do you want to check out one of my concerts sometime?" And he asked me if he could go sometime. So, like you said, I
Rad.
don't know if he knows. I don't know if he knows what he's getting himself into. But we're gonna take him to like a surf concert this week. My girlfriend likes a surf band, and it's like free for kids, I guess. So we're gonna check them
What's the
out. And
band?
they're called the Itchy Bonds, and it's a weird hardcore connection because I used to put out records back in the day and book shows and shit. And this band, who was from the hardcore scene, but they ended up becoming like a pretty big emo band. I put out their like their first record. They were called Roses Are Red, and then they signed to Trustkill. And their
Rad.
singer has just always been involved with music and in the scene and stuff. And now he runs a pretty successful surf label called High Tide. And he it
Cool.
turns out I was Googling the band. I was like, "Who is this Itchy Bonds band? My girlfriend wants us to see next week." And I looked it up, and he put out him and his wife on their record label High Tide. He put out their last EP like 6 months ago. This dude is
Wow.
from our local, who's from Rochester and now lives in New Jersey and has this like surf label. So I was like, I sent him
A
a message. I was
surf
like, dude,
label out of Rochester.
he's in New Jersey now, but he's from
Oh,
Rochester.
New
But
Jersey has stuff.
yes.
New Jersey
Yeah,
stuff has
he's
stuff.
Atlantic City. They put on like a pretty, I don't know, High Tide summer holiday. I think it's like right after. I'm guessing the band that we're seeing here is playing that next, the following weekend or whatever. But yeah, it's crazy.
Sure.
He's, it's just like a small world. I just happened to Google the band and to see who they were. And like, I assume they'd be on like a major label or some like Matador or some shit, at least. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh shit, I know the dude who runs this label or whatever. You know what I mean? It's so weird.
Yeah, no, it's totally.
Yeah. But it's just cool having kids and just hoping that, you know, they get into something that's not just like mumble rap or whatever is popular on
Oh,
TikTok in 5 or 6 years or whatever, you know?
I'm trying to relocate right now before my son walks in and starts asking me a million questions. Hold on one sec. I don't mean to put you in the dark here. Let me get out of my office really quick.
No, I think that pretty much what we got left. Hopefully I'll tell Greg, try to edit this part out when he edits the episode. I think mainly all I'll pretty mainly left to ask you about is the show, SummerSlam.
Let
Kind of
me
talk
get
about that
out
a little
really
bit.
quick. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I need
Yeah,
to
no,
sip
you're
up
fine.
here really fast. Right, my friend. Sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
No, but yeah, going back to the, sorry, go ahead.
No, say what you're gonna say, because I have something funny I want to ask you about SummerSlam before we start talking about that, or if that's what you're gonna start talking about, I'll say the funny thing now, I guess.
Yeah, go ahead.
Are you an late 80s, early 90s wrestling fan, having been around the same ages as myself and Greg, I guess?
Totally.
Because obviously that's where the name came from then. We're not going to do any trademark infringement on this with this podcast,
God, dude,
obviously,
always
or anything.
It's so funny. People are really like, dude, are you worried about the trade infringements? Like, things like that. I'm like, dude, if Vince McMahon tells me to shut it down, I would take it as a, if he even knows who I am, that would be the coolest, funniest thing ever. I would gladly take that email and frame it and just, I don't know. They call it SummerSlam SD. No, the thing is, because like San Diego got changed into with our baseball team the last couple of years, we started calling it Slam Diego because we did a lot of home runs. We're not very good with sports. We only have one team and we've never won a championship. We suck. But the fucking point is like the Slam Diego thing came in a bunch. And I don't know. For some reason, when I thought of SummerSlam, it's kind of like when I put shirts together, when I do other things like that. It something just clicks. I'm like, that's it. That's it right there. And I'm fucking with anything else. That's it. And it's funny too, because people are like, there's no slam bands on here. I'm like, you guys are missing the point a little bit and you're getting way too technical. I'm like, I got Barrio Slam. That's the name of one of the bands playing on it. I didn't give it like a ton of wrestling like stuff to it besides the name, but I'm definitely a diehard 80s, early 90s WWF, not WWE, WWF. You know, just huge fan. That was like my era right there.
Yeah, it's the shit
I
that
wanted
I grew
to
up
kind
on.
Of keep going on with it. I was like, shit, maybe I should do a Royal Rumble, the next one, even though they just had the show called the Rumble. Because I have, you know, more of these things I want to do, and SummerSlam's, that's going to be inconsistent, but I kind of want to do one in the spring. I'm like, kicking around what I'm going to do in the spring. But I'm kicking around, like, is it going to be another wrestling reference name? Is that going to be like the thing? What am I going
to. That's Mania. Spring will be Mania. You have to come up with some kind of Mania one.
Yeah, so it's going to be like a hardcore Mania or you know, there was, I was thinking of like some of the old school ones that aren't around anymore because there were so many, and I remember I used to have like all the VHS videos of the different you know, wrestling events besides WrestleMania and SummerSlam, but something wrestling I think is rad. I actually have this company I'm going to work with that does, it's like, I'm not sure if you guys have it out there or if it's trending out there yet, but in LA and now starting in San Diego, the new thing, and it's really only at hardcore shows and metal shows, is including wrestling as part of the actual show, whether it's an actual arena or they just go in the pit and they use it as their arena to like do full on wrestling. It's like a new niche here.
This was my idea in fucking 1997. We were coming home from the first, what became Hellfest, it was the first Syracuse Fest. We were talking, these people were getting so annoyed that were driving us home, too. We were rattling off all these bands that could play, like Spaz, speaking of West Coast, like bands that were into, like, wrestling and shit. And we were hardcore wrestling. It was a joke, obviously, but, like, it's just so crazy how, like, all the, like, we were talking about hip-hop and how hip-hop and hardcore are kind of hand-in-hand now, too, almost a little bit. Like, it's crazy how hardcore, because of, I don't think it's because of the commercialization of it, but just all these different art forms or like things that we've always been into separately are now like a part of the culture. It's so crazy. Like we would have a few times back in the day, people jokingly wrestling in the pit. I'm sure it happened in other cities too, but now it's like a regular thing out there now, or.
It's becoming a thing. And they're not like shitty bands like that play them. They'll get like dope ass bands. Like I saw Dead Heat did one. Tarena did one. I mean, I was going to do it on my pre-show, but the venue was like, why don't you just chill out for a sec before, you know, they're already worried about it. So I'm like, all right, I get it. Maybe we'll try it a little bit later on, but it's totally becoming a thing. And I was this keeps going. I'm going to have to make this part of it might be part of SummerSlam next year. No.
So I guess if you do it more as like Cornette would say, like Outlaw Mud Show, like having the people just fighting on the floor, that's one thing. But like, is there ever a time where they have a ring and like a band playing? Like, where does the band play then? Do they play in the ring or somewhere separate?
So they play on the stage and they'll put like the ring.
There's a ring too?
So there's two ways to do it. There's one way is it's like where it's there's a ring, and then where it would be like kind of like which has got to eat most of the capacity, but they do them in like bigger places too. But they'll put like a ring in like what would be the pit area, so there's still people around, and then the bands play, or which is like so obviously that's more centered towards the actual wrestling, or it's like the other way where it's more about the bands, and then in between bands, and which I'm always about like what's a, what else can we bring to the show to add to it, you know? Like what more can we do? Like how can we make shows more fun? Fuck the crazy wrestling match in between the shows, you know? I don't like, you know, there's certain parts where like the business sense, like, you know, if you're doing a show at a club, I'm sure they want people at least hitting the bar in between bands. So you gotta work on that, you know, kind of if that's the business sense of shit. But I don't give a fuck. I mean, I'll pay you and that's take your money and let me do what I want with the show. And if it's insurance fits and everything hit, you know, it's there, fuck it. And in between sets, if, you know, they don't do it like the way I've seen it done. It's not like all night long. They'll do like a 20-minute like couple matches like towards the end type deal. But it's very interesting, you know. I don't know if it's going to take over the nation, but it's something cool, and it's definitely there's so much. I see it so much now, so, like with the hardcore and the wrestling jumping into it, whether it's in this sense, which is pretty big sense, but like you know, you hear about it a lot. You got shit like MyFest or other things. One thing that you brought up that I don't want to forget about quickly is the commercialization of hardcore, because it's something that you know we've been around for a little bit. We see it from a different view, you know. When I see, like I mentioned earlier, like I got nothing against Gal, but when I see them on Taco Bell and I hear a song that they just did. That sounds like Sonic Youth. I'm like, it seems like a 1994. What happened to punk rock? It seems like that's happening in hardcore. Do you think that's the same thing, though?
Well, here's the thing, and I
People.
think it's funny that you would say 94 because I think it was when we interviewed Mark from Time Heist like a few months ago. We were talking about it with him. We've talked about this a lot on this podcast, obviously, because
Okay.
it's been a hot button topic for about a year now. My whole, well, first of all, I don't really want to talk too much shit about the Scowl thing. I think they
Yeah.
drew attention to themselves by even making a statement or whatever she did with the industry plan thing. Because I like you probably and everybody else never would have even known anything about that if you even know what I'm talking about. But that's a
Yeah,
separate
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
But the weird thing about the 94 thing is I think people that were our age then or even younger probably look at Rancid and bands like that that like are like legacy bands for me now the same way that we're gonna look at like some of these bands now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, and I don't my whole thing is, and I've said this on here before too, and I've never mentioned Scowl by name, but obviously I've pretty much always been talking about them. I don't care if a band comes into hardcore and does it like Turnstile, where they put out several records and
Yeah.
then they like progress into this band that they're this machine that they are now. But if a band comes into hardcore and puts out like one record and then starts referring to people that come to their shows as their fans and changes their sound instantly, like that's a different thing to me. You know what I mean? And
Yeah, yeah.
it's not just Scowl doing that, but obviously they're in the news right now, kind of because I feel like they put themselves in there.
Yeah.
But like like I said, I wouldn't have even known anything about any of the Taco Bell shit if they wouldn't have even brought it up. Like
I
I
wouldn't
don't
either, honestly. I just
like
saw
I
the
don't
commercial and I heard it. Otherwise,
yeah.
yeah, what you said about the industry plan thing. Like I saw that post and whatever,
Yeah.
and I was like, oh, this is okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm drawn
Yeah.
to this subject
I
more.
think they're just drawing more attention themselves by even bringing it up, honestly. And like I said, I don't ever mention them on here by name because I'm not really trying to talk shit about one band. And it's not
Yeah.
just them that I feel like that's doing it. And I've never really thought of them as an industry plant. I don't know if there's any bands come. I'm sure bands will come into hardcore now that way, like make
Yeah.
it look like they're an indie band and not real, whatever the fuck, you know. But my whole thing, and I've said it on here before, and I'm always going to say that. Like, I think if you're a hardcore band, be a hardcore band. If you want to be an alternative band, like, why don't you just go start off as an alternative band and play that scene? Like, why do you even have to, like, play a year or two of the hardcore circuit? That, to me, that makes no sense. You know what I mean?
That's it's I've been saying the same thing too. And not and again, nothing against those guys, you know, do your thing and whatever, I'll do all their best, you know. But no, it's just an interesting thing because you didn't see that, you know, and I feel like up until 2017, 18, hardcore was not where it is obviously now. And now you see bands where, like, I think like a Dream could not change anything, and they could be like the next Hatebreed. That's got to be the next Hatebreed. I really don't know what other band could say. I'm sure there's other ones, but they're like the Epitaph. They got the freaking promote. They can probably go on and not change their sound, kind of like how Rancid did. But I remember, like, you know, Rancid was a huge band for me. And then when I got heavily in the punk scene, then it's like, no, Rancid's a sellout. But I'm like, that's a great band. You know, even though, okay, what, they make money, they're on MTV, they're on bigger stages. All right. But is that really my problem or whatever? You know, whatever. It's funny just how things move around or whatever. But, you know, when I feel like the music industry, when they find an avenue to success, some people are going to take it. Some people just might end up on that avenue and just happen for them. But some other bands, I feel like, might be taking this. I'm always interested because it's a very interesting time right now with hardcore and all the different things going on and stuff like that happening and whatnot. So it's interesting, for sure.
I think it's good to see things getting bigger, obviously, but I just kind of want it to remain hardcore. And like, yeah. I started a separate podcast called Spreading the Hardcore Reality, and now I'm doing more and more things with that name, and it's for that reason, like, because I want to, like, spread, like, real hardcore. And like you said in the beginning, I'm all about bands evolving and having different sounds in hardcore. Don't get me wrong. I don't want every band to sound like, I love Terror and I love New York Hardcore, but like, when I hear bands now that are doing that sound, it's kind of stale because we've heard so many bands play that sound. You know what I mean? Like, there's still some good newer bands and current bands doing that, but I do kind of prefer to hear, like, bands that are doing different things with hardcore. I just don't, if you're trying to be commercial, just go be commercial. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand that. You know what I mean? That, yeah.
It's very, very, very interesting. Like, a band that I really, really love right now, another one, No Pressure. Like, they're fucking awesome. I just saw them at this hardcore. I think they're an amazing band. But I'm like, yo, I'm from San Diego. Like, I remember seeing Blink-182 in the mid-90s. I'm like, I know who Blink-182 is. Does anyone else realize this is the same thing? It's just a little faster. I'm like, it's literally, I even live in the town that those guys are from. Like, it's the same shit. It's just a little faster. But I still think it's awesome. I love it. But I'm like, it's crazy to me when I see like a Tsunami, No Pressure. Or when I just saw Pain Truth, Mind Force, and then here comes No Pressure. And then the next band is Death Threat, whatever it was. I'm like, this is crazy how all these different elements are in here, you know, and whatnot. And at the same time, yeah, I mean, when you're younger, you like hearing the same shit, whatever. But when you get older, you're like, all right, I'm not going to listen to the same thing all the time, every single day. Like, certain days, it's a little bit more upbeat than, or certain times of the day than it is, you know, when I wake up in the morning. Not necessarily the heaviest music I want to hear when I wake up in the morning. Maybe I will listen to something a little more melodic. And then as I get through my day or I go to the gym, I'll get on some other heavier shit or whatnot. But it's very interesting to see the mix. And I think it's fun. Like, seeing different bands play different music at the same show, even though they're all still somehow under this umbrella of hardcore. I mean, reality, I think some bands aren't really under that umbrella, but they still kind of go into the shows and they're still there. I think it makes it fun. But it's definitely, you know, I'm still trying to figure it out myself. Like, what is the end game? What is really going on? Like, is this just a band that somehow fell in the hardcore umbrella, or is this purposely at the time because hardcore is so big right now and trending where it's also viral? You know, you go to a hardcore show, people want to video everything because you know, you don't see people dance like that. Dancing now is another thing too. You're an upstate New York guy, you know, and I'm sorry, how old are you, if you don't mind?
I have to think about it. 42.
So I'm about to be 39. Yeah, so like when I was coming up watching dancing, you know, it was something where you'd be like, you know, you dance a certain way, but only a couple people would get away with just like, I'll call them, I'll say that fool clears the pit. When this fool clears the pit, when he shows up, you get the fuck out of the way. He's going to make it very fucking clear. There's hammers. He's a fucking sledgehammer, you know, and that's it. And if you fuck around, there's repercussions. Now I feel like it's, you know, because everyone can be a sledgehammer now. And because everyone's got the phone and the shit where you can post it right away and people never seen this shit, you see a million sledgehammers with no repercussions. So it seems more like there's so many opportunities and so many different ways that it feels to me a little bit like that are using this hardcore thing to gain their moment, to get their, you know, their exposure, wherever it may be, through music or through, you know, dancing or whatever. It's interesting because, yeah, you know, back in particularly upstate New York, you know, like I said, we just would hear the tales, and that we heard the tales in Boston where we got our own tales, you know, but to hear the tales of, you know, the dudes in upstate and all the different shows, and then to see, you know, every once in a while that dude you heard about would be at the show and he'd be like, all right, this dude's gonna clear the pit, he's gonna fuck everybody up right now. It's now, it's, yeah, you don't have that one dude anymore. Now it's just everyone's that dude or girl, you know. Interesting how it's changed up so much.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, like you said, you've referred to the viral moments a few times, and obviously Hate56 has been mostly good for the culture, but I think a lot of people also want to appear on there and look their best, so I think that has a lot to do with, because, like, I don't remember ever seeing, like 150 people on the stage at a show before either, you know what I mean? Like, maybe 5 or 10, like, there'd be a few friends of the band and, like, the photographers, and then, like, if you were going to stage dive, but you were just waiting for the right part, you might be on there for like a song or two. But like, I don't remember too many shows where like there was more people on the stage, it seems like, than on the floor. It's just crazy, you know?
Dude, that's a really good point that I haven't thought about. There is more people on stage now than I guess totally didn't realize. Yeah. I'm like kind of referring to the sound of pure thing, like half the crowd's on the stage, you know, like even if this is hardcore, you know, if, when that song about ever, like, you know, that place is flooded. Yeah, I don't remember. No, going back to it, that wasn't a thing. But, you know, you had to, I mean, I love how people hand off the mics now to, like, people in the crowd. Like, you mentioned Terror. Like, last time I saw Terror, I think Scott Vogel sang, like, maybe half of a song, you know, before someone grabbed the mic and just, like, boom, here you go, sing it. You know, and a lot of bands do that. And I think that Andrainda, like, so many cool bands do it. And I think that's really, really cool. And I think that brings like such a fun element to the show. Like, fuck, what show was I at where they gave the bass? Maybe it was Madball. They just like one of the bands, like, you know, legendary band, just like, right here, you play bass. They just threw the bass on a kit. And then I actually, right before pandemic, the last band I saw actually was Madball. And the last thing that happened before the pandemic, because I was like end of February, I sang Pride and I'm fucking like, this is so cool. Like, this didn't happen back in the day. Back in the day, I don't think they were handing off the mic. They're like, you sing the rest of the most famous fucking song we have. It's all you. Go ahead. Fucking, you got the mic first. You know, if you want to hand it off, you hand it off. I think that thing is really fucking cool. The amount of crowd participation that there is now. But yeah, it's, I didn't think about that before. There's so much action going on stage. And yeah, is it because people want to be on the camera? Or is it because we just got a new thing now where it's like, now we can go and have a little bit more fun, and we can just, you know, people just do the dials change a little bit where it's different, you know, kind of a little bit different way now. I don't know what it is.
I think it's a lot to do with the features that we were talking about from hip hop too, because like that, the only one I remember back in the day is like, I'm sure there was a couple, but late 90s, Buried Alive had Jamie Josta on the last song on their LP. And 25 to Life had a couple, but I can't remember like too many bands. Like, it wasn't a regular thing, you know what I mean? Like, and now it's just like just handing the mic off. And I mean, but honestly, I feel like, especially for a band like Terror, if you're on the road all the time, it probably gives you a break just to be able to hand the mic off and not have to be going as crazy for the whole song and just be able to chill out and watch somebody else sing your lyrics for a minute. You know, it's probably a nice break.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. They want to save the vocal cords. I was listening to, I can't remember if it was Terror or I was someone doing an interview. And they were like, dude, we went to Europe and it was the first time like we had to sing all of our songs. Like, it was so much different than being in America, because I think maybe it was Drain. Maybe they're talking about the first time they went there. Because they're very like crowd, you know, participation band, obviously. Those two bands probably the best two. I mean, not to say other bands aren't, but I just, those guys are really good at getting the crowd as part of the show and feeling that moment. But yeah, I think it was him saying like, dude, that was the first time I actually sang like my whole set. It was weird. And I was like, that's pretty cool that, you know, you get to experience different things here than over in Europe. But then, of course, where do all the hardcore bands want to play? You know, they want to play in Europe because they're, for whatever reason, I haven't been to a hardcore show in Europe. I want to. I want to experience and see what everything's all about out there. That's definitely on my bucket list. Like you mentioned Hellfest earlier. I would love to go one day out to Hellfest or be whacking on one of those ones. You know, those are big, huge, like, music festivals. But to see, you know, what everything's all about, you know.
Yeah, I think when my kids, hopefully when our kids get a little bit older, I can try to talk them into us all taking a trip. Because that's definitely something I've always wanted to do, too. I've never been in a band or anything, so I always envy, you know, we've interviewed a few people who've gone to Europe, and every time they talk about it, I'm just like, man, you guys are so lucky to be able to go do all this shit. And sometimes people like complain about this or that. And I'm like, man, I would just to be able to go over there for like 2 weeks just to see all this shit and go to a couple of festivals and, you know, just be so cool.
I mean, that's gotta be the ultimate high, to be like in fucking Sweden and fucking someone singing your fucking song and they don't know fucking English, but they know your song in English. I mean, that's fucking amazing, man. That's super cool. And yeah, that's one of the cool things about hardcore expanding. It's like, you know, it's your New England band is just as popular in New England as it is in Sweden somehow, you know, because of the different ways people can hear it and find it. You know, there's pros and cons, I guess, with the whole aspect of everything and situation where everything's at right now. Interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot more correspondence with international people with, like, doing the Instagram thing and with doing the other podcasts that I do. And I'm always thinking about things, like, before I send messages. Because I know some people, like, their English is definitely better than any of the languages of theirs that I would try to speak. But I know some of them probably know English, but a lot of them are probably using translators. And I'm always like, should I, like, the slang that I used, should I use a contraction? You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking about so many different things. And because my girlfriend, I always tell her, like, I have such a, like, when I talk to people, I have such, like, a short form or whatever where I don't even, like, explain half the thing. And sometimes I'll look at a message that I sent to somebody, I'm like, man, they probably don't even know what the fuck I'm talking about. Like, I'm just like, yeah, hit me up and send me the track, you know? And they're like, what the fuck are you even talking about, you know?
I always say that's the problem with text, is it gets taken out of context, you know? You're saying it in a fucking, like, a, hey, let me hear your music. Yeah, send it over. But if you don't read it like that, it says, send me the track. I'll check it out, you know? And I do the same shit all the time, where someone, like, will want me to book their band and they'll send me all their shit. I'm like, thank you. And I'm really saying thank you for sending it to me. Like, this is really cool that you did that. But then I could be like, I read it from, like, a different perspective, and I'm like, oh, wait, maybe that just sounded more like, fuck you. So I'm like, that's the problem with these things. I wish, you know, when I was coming out, we just had to call bands. You know, I remember the way I learned how to book shows was a band put me under their wing when I was like 13, a band called the Dyslexics and out of Boston. Shout out to those guys, man. They gave me a fucking tutorial every day on how to do shit. Homeboy gives me the book. He's like, this is every fucking band in punk rock's number. You fucking call them and you talk to them, and this is how you talk to them. This is what you go over. And it was way different than sending an email or a text, you know? I remember calling, like, those Crudos, and I didn't get to book them, but it was cool because I got to learn from them. They would just be like, all right, you're obviously a kid, you know? Let's talk, you know, let me teach you some shit. We're calling Andy Flag, you know, from Anti-Flag, you know, when they first, you know, blew up and when Die for the Government first came out, trying to book them and stuff. And, you know, having to actually physically call and talk to people. And there's nothing that can be misconstrued when you're doing that compared to when it's like text and, yeah, or like a message or an email, people taking it a different way. I take shit. I am not like a perfect person. I'll read something, I'll be like, what the fuck? And I'll read it the wrong way too. So it's definitely different ways to communicate sometimes fuck things up.
I've seen letters that I wrote to bands in 1998, and I'm just like, oh my God, like, how did I make it this far? I was fucking so stupid back then. But let's circle back around to probably the highlight of this episode that we'll be reeling people in for, that we have not really even discussed, I think, at all, really, the whole episode. So you got the show coming up. I'm hoping that we'll have this episode out like Thursday-ish of this week. So it'll be like the day before, right? Your pre-show, because your pre-show is Friday, or?
Yeah.
So let's go through. Like, you're having SummerSlam's like the full show on Saturday, and then what, you're doing a pre-show on Friday?
It's a pre-show, but it's really like a day one. It's just called a pre-show. You know, there's fucking 9 bands on it. I've lost track of this time. We've had a couple bands for medical reasons, you know, have to draw, you know, is what it is. But the 18th, basically, the firm stopped in March, and I had to figure out how I wanted to do it, because it was just clothing line, and I knew I wasn't going to do the clothing line the right way. So I was like, I'm not going to be at every music festival and expo. So what else am I doing with this thing? And I'm booking shows, but I'm not booking shows the right way. I know there's a right way to do it. What the fuck am I doing? And the last show I booked, I talked about this on the previous pod, it fucking bombed. And yeah, it was when it rains in San Diego, that fucks everything up. And there was like 4 shows that night. And I was like, I'm not doing anything right. What the fuck am I doing? So I said, fuck it. I'm just going to go all in. I'm going to sit, hold on. And when I come back, I'm going to come back with the biggest fucking show San Diego scene. And I'm going to use that to open up from there. And that's what SummerSlam is. The pre-show is, it's, there's not one band playing that I turned down some really big bands because I didn't feel like it fit the flavor. I just said, I got a certain thing I'm trying to do with this. I got a certain goal, a certain vision. And the number one thing is to put San Diego on the map and to do our shit right. So on the 18th, we start with the banger pre-show. Mongrel, it's an awesome fucking, it's more, the pre-show has got a lot more, pretty much all the bands are all California bands. I'm not trying to think if there's one that's not a California band. California's such a big fucking state, so it's like, you know, on the East Coast, I'd be like 13 states, but either way, it's pretty much most all California bands. But yeah, the first day with Mongrel headlining, a Barrio Slam, and then just a slew of just awesome local bands that really put in the work. That's my thing. Is like, I'm gonna book a banger. Like, I kind of came up with this recipe. It's like, all right, get that banger, that one that just is. You don't have to worry about anything else being booked. Like, that band's going to crush. And then get an awesome number 2. I even believe in an awesome number 3. And then get all those bands that deserve and put in that work. Let them get their opportunity. Let them come out here and rip this motherfucker apart with these awesome bands. I want to be the guy that fucking put on, you know, so-and-so band, and now they're off doing their thing. But the shows I did help them do their thing, and I see them out there earning it and putting in their work and that kind of thing. So, you know, whether it's the pre-show or SummerSlam, they both represent that. But the pre-show is, in both shows, just, it's been kind of like changed around a little bit with bands having to cancel for medical reasons. It's basically, it's a deal where you get like 2 shows for the price of 1. And, you know, you get something you've never seen before in a brand new venue. That's the other thing too, is the venue is new to San Diego. I threw a show there a long time ago. In March. That was when that bombed. And then they've only had a couple shows that are like in our kind of genre. It's in Barrio Logan. It's this venue called Corazon del Barrio. But we haven't had a venue like it in San Diego for a long time, because it's not a super huge room. It's a room that's a 450 cap. So you're really looking at, I mean, for SummerSlam, I'm kind of fucked, because I got a billion bands, so it's like over 100 people alone and just bands, and then you got staff, so it's like I got like 300-350 sellable tickets, so it's an intimate setting. Like, there's not a bad seat in the house, and it's all ages, and it's got a full bar, but it's also got food, you know, it's got not just food, like really good food. We have designated merch areas. If you're in a band, you're not sitting at a booth on the table, you got actually a cool, actually, balcony green room that's, you know, so the bands are stoked. And it's right off the highway. It's close to everything. It's right in the heart of San Diego. Like I said, we haven't had a venue like that here for a long time. It's either been like 21 and up, which, I mean, I'm fucking almost 39, so it doesn't matter to me. I'd rather, you know, 21 up is cool. Or our other venues that are old ages that do shows similar, they're like 2,000 plus capacity, and they're Live Nation venues, and you're fucked. And there's also not an independent promoter that's doing the things that I'm doing for San Diego. So there's independent promoters, but it's not a, like doing SummerSlam type shit. So with the venue and with the show and with the everything, it's all something really new for us here that we haven't had for a long time, because San Diego can do it. You know, we have the people, we have the bands, we now have the facilities for every single type of venue, or any single type of show. Where we have the location. This isn't Lincoln, Nebraska. You know, we're fucking 2 hours from LA. You know, but Southern California is the mecca of fucking of this thing. You know, I don't give a fuck who you are, where you're from. Southern California has never dipped off. It has never dipped off. It's never had a slow time. You know, if you're like a New Yorker, I know a lot of hardcore New York dudes, and they'll be like, yeah, New York just ain't the same anymore. There's just, the shows aren't the same. Nothing's the same. You know, I hear more complaining from the OGs. You know, where California still, Southern California, that's all I know, but Southern California is still the same. So we still got a ton of people. We can still throw big shows. There's still awesome bands, like amazing bands everywhere. Like the show you wear in LA has got the best, some of the best bands in the world. You know, it's right there. There's just no reason for me why they should all be starting in Orange County. So this show is like, all right, screw this. No more shows start in Orange County or in LA from now on. From now on, if people book shows, they know to start in San Diego. And my goal is, after this show, for everyone to know, like, San Diego is the spot. Do not skip this town. We're right there. You know, we're not physically connected as a county, like county lines. We're not physically connected to any county besides Riverside County, which is, but we're also still really far from Riverside. But because we have like Camp Pendleton that's in between us and Orange County. So all like Orange County, Ventura County, LA County, Inland Empire. They're all connected. We're like a little separate little island down here for county-wise, if you look at it on a map. So my goal is to set this pre-show off and then just to go next level with SummerSlam, man. I got so much different shit up my sleeve for SummerSlam and cool different things that we're doing. And, you know, it's all about the fans' experience. You know, everyone coming in and watching the bands play and having a good time and that kind of thing. I really want people coming in and just having the best show ever. And then also the band's experience. I want them to come down and be like, dude, they are doing it proper. And, you know, these guys are actually putting in the work. And this dude, Nino, is actually doing what he said he's going to do. And we're going to come back and we're going to bring our friends. You know, that's the idea of SummerSlam, is to set it off, for lack of another word, you know, big time. But with the lineup, man, I mean, particularly with SummerSlam, I can't believe that's the fucking lineup. Like, it was my dream lineup. I had bands set up, and I put, you know, you said you put on shows and stuff, and particularly something like this, you know, you set it up and you're like, all right, this would be like my dream setup if I could get these bands and if I could do it this way. And somehow everything just kind of fell the way I wanted to. And the night ends with Strife, with this, like, my favorite bands. It's like one of my favorite bands in 97. I think that's, I mean, they're the kings of California hardcore. They got 30 years in. They're a band, like, when I was, like, in the 90s going back and forth between East Coast and West Coast, that was the one band that was, like, mutually, like, very well respected. And I was, like they're kings, no matter if it's California, whether they're in New York or a boss. And, like, they hold the fuck down. And to have them in that show, and, you know, to me, like, a couple of their albums in particular are just defined. So some of the best music I've ever heard. I think particularly, like, I've said it for years, I think Blistered is it's arguably the best hardcore song of all time. I think that without that song, I mean, that album in particular is amazing. I mean, I could talk about that album for an hour and a half just on itself. But that particular song, and a lot of the riffs on that album, but I think a lot of shit isn't there without that band, that album, and that particularly that song. And I just even just posted something randomly about it yesterday, because it is, like, if you listen to, like I said, I'm like a huge Mind Force fan. I hear so much, like, those early Chugga Chugga, you know, that's what we used to call it. I don't know if that's what it's still called with people now, but, you know, if you're from upstate New York, you know the Chugga Chugga song. You know, that's what we would call that shit. You know, we'd be like, yo, that's hard as fuck. There's no way you can't move when you hear that shit. Like, there's no, if you have the ability to not move when you hear those breakdowns and those riffs, you're a very calm fool. Because even just thinking about it, I want to go off, you know. So to be able to end SummerSlam with all these amazing, awesome bands, and then the last band being Strife, fuck yeah, I'm fired the fuck up. And so is everyone too. And just to the people that are listening, man, I've had so many really, really awesome people, and just strangers as well. Just be so nice and just literally just say thank you for putting on this show. Like, where we don't know what we'd do without this. This is so cool that you're doing it. I've had people that actually, I never thought they would even know that there's hard work that gets put into this shit, but be like, dude, we understand that you're putting in a lot of hard work to do something with not a lot of payoff and no recognition. Like, we're just saying we recognize you and thank you. And I think that's really cool. You know, I think it's really cool that the people are stoked and they're actually appreciative of it. And they're as fired up, it seems, as I am for the show. So, yeah, that's, you know, where SummerSlam's going down. And we'll see what happens. A week from today, it'll be the day after. We'll see where everything settles, you know?
Yeah, we did for episode 50, we did a top 50 breakdowns, and Blistered was definitely one of my picks for that episode. And my first, I think it was my first black eye that I ever got at a hardcore show was at in a Strife pit in like 96, 97. They were on tour, Sick of It All. Yeah. And we actually did an interview with Sick of It All that night. And that's a funny story too, because we were going to do some weird thing where, like, we didn't bring a recorder, and we were just going to act like we were remembering all the shit, because it was like pre cell phone days and shit. And then we did the interview, but it came out weird. I don't know. I had a fanzine back then, but for some reason I never printed it. I interviewed Sick of It All, and it never, I never printed it. I don't know what I did with that recording either. I should have done something with it, but, that's dope. I'm stoked that you're doing all this. I definitely have a similar idea of something I'm hoping to pull together here later this year. It's not totally official yet, so I'm not going to really say much about it. But December 10th, hopefully we'll have some more info on that soon. But yeah, I think we talked about pretty much everything. Is there anything else that we didn't get to that you'd want to throw in an interview? Obviously, we're going to post a flyer with the episode, and I'll post it up for you this week and shit.
Yeah, it's just basically, you know, for people that are attending the show, there's super cool. There's people flying from all over, you know, people attending the show, just get there early. The pre-show it's kind of like I said, it's like a package deal. So it's like $20 just for the pre-show if you just want to go to that. But if you bought the ticket for the $60 ticket, it's like kind of like a weekend pass. It's like the first 150 people just to get in for free as long as they got that ticket. So get in early that first day, and then the second day we have a limited amount of tickets that are only $50 that we're going to keep at the door that are just for that one day only. So if you're going to SummerSlam, just get there early, support the bands. We're doing like 10 minute in betweens. I'm really focusing on bands playing longer, and you know, we don't need to spend all the time in between each set and whatnot. And again, I just got to watch two amazing music fests pull it off. So I'm like, all right, they can do it. We can do it. I've got 5.5 months of planning on this thing ahead. So if anyone wants to go, though, www.thefirm1904.com is the website where you can buy your tickets. You can also go to the.firm.1904 on Instagram, and there's a link in bio. You can see plenty about all the bands. I'm posting a lot of stuff right now as we get into the week leading in. You can also, if you just want to check out SummerSlam stuff on Instagram, you can just go to summer_slam_SD. And that's just all 100%, obviously, stuff for the concert and information. And if anyone has questions about the show or anything like that, just DM either of those. I answer to them. I'm responsive on it. I'm not like just sitting around. So I definitely, particularly as we get closer to it, and for people that want to come out of town, I want to make sure that I direct them as much as possible and help them as much as possible and make sure that their experience is you know, everything that they want and more. But Corazon Del Barrio, it's all ages, like I said, you know, full bar if you got an ID. We're going to have outside areas. We're only a couple blocks from the water, so it's not like you're in the desert, you know.
Right now, you can be in 110 degrees, or you can be in like 75 and chilling. You know, so I hope it's a nice chill 75 day. Right now, the weather looks like it's going to be pretty much that. So it's not going to be too wild. But I'm gonna have merchants there, or some merch there. I'm gonna have vendors there. I'm gonna have food for obviously, but the all the bands, as many bands as possible. We're gonna have all their stuff set up. So I'm trying to make it as pure of a festival as possible, where you see the things you would normally see, but it's in a club environment, not in a outdoor environment, not in like a 2,500 capacity room or something like that. So, like I said, anyone going, just get there early, get your tickets ASAP, thefirm1904.com.
All right. Any shout outs or anything before I
Oh man, I could go on forever with the shout outs. And there's so many people been so helpful, but I definitely want to shout out Corazon Del Barrio. This guy's been really helpful. Matt from Till 2 Club is the guy that runs all the shows for Till, or excuse me, he's runs all the shows for Corazon now, and he's been extremely helpful, him and just the whole the his whole team, all the bands, my homie Javi from AK Apparel, you know, with helping produce all the apparel and help me, you know, trying to teach me Photoshop. One day I'll get it, you know. I don't want to miss anyone, but I've had so many cool people, whether it's like, you know, Ron Martinez or Joe Hardcore or some of these other guys just give me advice on how to run shit, or homie Nacho from Nothing Like Booking, you know, just again helping me learn how to make sure I'm doing the thing correctly, because that's my biggest thing. It's like there's no excuse if you prepare correctly, and all you got to do is ask. He says no, they say no. But I've been lucky where everyone has been like, yeah, let me help you out and show you what's up and help you do the best you can for your fest. And you know, and people like you as well, you know, thank you and everyone else that's let me come on and help promote the show and help promote the firm and what I'm trying to do. So without us, we're nothing, man. So we all got to work together. And you know, I hope one day I can help someone, you know, do their thing, and just like people have helped me, and just like you're helping me right now promote the show, man.
The Hardcore Archive podcast is Josh Lyons and Greg Benoit with creative support from Rob Antonucci.
This podcast is a product of the Rochester Hardcore community. Theme song provided by Stand Fast.
Visit Hardcore Archive Podcast on Linktree to listen to past episodes.
Follow Hardcore Archive Podcast and Enterprise Hardcore Podcast on Instagram for updates.
If you have an idea for an episode or would like to have your band's music featured during the closing credits, please contact us at hardcorearchivepodcast@gmail.com.